Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Bill C. He is the author of 33 Days, Touring in a Van, Sleeping on Floors, Chasing Dreams. This classic coming-of-age book really captures of what it's like to be young and at the crossroads. Is he to take the shot in making the band work or goes his own separate way? Well, we're going to find out, because he actually did decide to follow his dreams and hit the road as a lead singer of Divine Weeks. Today, we're going to be talking about some of his experiences, thoughts, and reflections. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Well, this is exciting to talk to you about this, because I know that it's going to be really interesting, and we're going to delve into some areas that I'm sure our listening audience is going to be really interested in hearing. And one of the things, as I was going through your information in your book, it really came to me that you did something that many young people dream about, want to do, never accomplish, but you actually did. You actually took a band and went on a tour. And just tell us about how that really felt to be able to do that.
The book is, you know, at its core, it's a coming-of-age story, and though it's a true story, and it's from my journals I kept at the time, it's one of those now-or-never moments. Take your shot at making the band work, or leave it all behind and go your separate ways. And I think every one of us has that moment. We come to our own personal crossroads, and you know, you have to decide: live your dream or regret it for the rest of your life. And hopefully, you know, 33 days touches that part of us.
So when you actually went on the tour, how old were you?
22.
And the rest of the band members were the same, pretty much the same age, were they?
Yeah, three of the four of us grew up together. We were friends first, actually, and learned to play music, you know, along the way, and because it was just something that was exploding inside of us.
Yeah. So I can just visualize here these four guys getting together and playing in a garage or a basement.
Yeah,
am I visualizing correctly? Yeah. And when did you start playing in the band together? At what age?
Well, you know, like I said, three or four of us were high school friends, and you know, we played some talent shows together, and we all kind of, you know, said, well, you know, this is just a high school thing, and we were under the, you know, regime of our families, must go to college and achieve great things,
right.
You know, and you know, we played the part, we tried, but you know, it's like as I say in the book, but you know, we started first year of college, and it didn't take long before, you know, little lyrics and, you know, music notes started to appear on the margins of our lecture notes, and you know, it didn't take long before we just say, you know, what are we doing here? You know, just we can't live somebody else's dream, you know. So if not now, when? You know, ever.
And that's incredible for a 22-year-old to actually be that inspired to leave college and go on a road trip.
Well, I mean, for me, and particularly the guitarist in our band, who was raised in Indian, which makes a big part of the book, our friendship, we were both, you know, just, you know, under a lot of pressure and you know, family problems or culture constraints. And it was really a now or never moment. At some point, you get to a point in life where it's like, it's either them or me. And, you know, just you have to, you know, in a lot of ways, the book is a cautionary tale about sitting on your dreams, because the consequences can be dire.
Yes, of course, and I can certainly understand that. It just sort of, for me, as I'm reflecting back in my own lifetime at, you know, age 22, and still being under the influence of, as you say, the culture and the parents, and this is big for to, you know, go as a group. And of course, at age 22, you were of age, so you were able to do that. And it was interesting to flip through your book, and I particularly stopped where, when I saw that you were in Canada and Calgary and Edmonton. I live in Texas now, but I moved from Edmonton, and And I also smiled when you talked about the hotel in Calgary and how they were cleaning it, the area up because the Winter Olympics were coming. And, you know, I know those areas.
Yeah.
And
so
your experiences going to these different cities, not only in the United States and Canada, you know, but Canada also must have been quite an awakening for somebody that maybe didn't travel as much before.
Well, exactly. And I think, what I've been telling people, you know, is although it's a story of a band on tour, I really could have done a global search in my document, you know, as I was writing it. Mm-hmm. And it just changed rock band to, you know, traveling comedians or mountain climbers. And I think mm-hmm. the themes would have been exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It was an eye-opening experience for, you know, a group of guys first time out on their own. And, you know, as I said, it was something that was life-altering. And it just so happened that we just played music at the end of every mind-blowing day out there.
So what was it like to be out there first time on your own?
Well, we were hungry a lot. I mean, and I don't mean hungry art-wise. I mean, we were hungry. We were not.
We had no money to buy food.
We did not have money to buy food, and a lot of times it was an adventure getting enough gas money to get to the next town. And I think, you know, it is an insider's look, if you are so inclined, to, you know, how really there's only about 3% of people who make music who make big money, and the rest of us are doing it hopefully for the nobility of it, if I could say it that
uh-huh.
grand. You know, it's we were on a mission, and you know, it was something that felt, or it hurt too much not to go. I guess I put it that way. You know, it was something inside of us, we had to do this. And you know, it's a time in life where, you know, dreams don't have boundaries.
Uh-huh.
And you know, there's a great mix of bravado and terror, you know, and you're just, maybe you're just too stupid to know, or blind, you know, to know that you can't do it, so you just do it. And that's, you know, that only when you're that age, you know, can this sort of, as I say, this mix of bravado and terror, you know, lead to something that passes for courage.
You had mentioned dreams don't have boundaries, and that's a profound statement. Do you feel that now at your age and, you know, with this in the past, that dreams still don't have boundaries?
Well, without giving away the end of the book, what I'll say to that is, you know, I have a child now who's, you know, moving into adolescence. But there's a scene at the end of the book that essentially addresses that, which uh-huh. is, you know, in a lot of ways, this book ponders the idea of success. You know, Divine Weeks did not make it, you know, if you want to put it bluntly. We did not make it. But, in fact, you know, the book is really, it turns on its head the very idea of success. And we came up in Los Angeles where, you know, everyone seemingly is on the make 24/7 to make it. You know, everybody has, you know, their plan, their script, their sculpture, their band, their book, and which is great. But you can really lose sight of your own natural evolution when you're constantly looking around. And there's a great danger in borrowing other ideas, other people's idea of success. And in the end, in this book, I'm sitting with my daughter reading to her a story, okay. a bedtime story. She's young. And, you know, she turns to me and asks me, you know, are you going to be all right, you know, when I move to my castle, you know, and she's young, you know, and marry my prince. And the significance is she's wanting to make sure I'll be okay. And it dawns on me that, you know, I've got to keep shining my light, you know, and I got it for her, for me, you know, and it's not an idea of figuring out whether or not I quote unquote made it by other people's standards. It's that she still sees me pull out my guitar and play music. And so maybe somehow, you know, her light uh-huh. will shine because I'm still shining mine. And maybe this is a giant justification for me trying to make it, you know, make it go down easier. But, you know, I disagree. I think it really, in the end, you know, it was never really about huge success. It was always about being, you know, true to my art and continuing to create in its purest form. And that's really where the book comes to a natural conclusion in that light.
So, Bill, what were some of your personal struggles while you were on tour, your own personal struggle?
Well, like I said, we were friends first, and, you know, we went through a lot out there. As I said, my very best friend, who grew up Indian, he grew up in England with a lot of racism, and racism was always a galvanizing subject for the band. You know, we weren't out there proselytizing by any sense, but it was something that brought the band together, seeing what the effects of growing up that way had done to him. And there is a scene in the book, ironically, in Edmonton, and no reflection on the Canadian people who couldn't have been any nicer to us. But there was one, you know, dreadful night up there where he was attacked racially, and this was a big moment. And so that was the low point, yet at the same time we survived. And it did refocus us, and it raised the stakes and made this little tour into something more profound. It was a dividing line, and it was all that came before it, and then it became what's going to come after it. What do we get from this? And it made it real.
So what I'm also hearing is that the four of you were all sort of, in other words, on the same page. You had the same values and morals. And so, you know, and there was, and what I'm also hearing when you're talking about the racism that would happen against one of the band members, and I can understand that. I lived in Edmonton at the time that you're talking about. And so, yes, definitely there was racism at that time, unfortunately. But you're saying that this even kind of bonded you together. So I wanted you to talk more about the bonding that the four of you actually had.
Sure. I mean, like I said, it just so happened that we played music at the end of the day. And why I say that is we really had to become each other's support group out there. I mean, we were green as toads when we left town. You know, it was a lot. We'd never left home before, and, you know, it took so much to get out of town, away from home. You know, there's a certain amount of survival guilt, you know, to leave behind a mess. And for, you know, I grew up in a home, you know, sort of riddled with alcoholism and mental illness. And so, you know, to be able to give yourself the gift of opportunity, I guess would be the way to put it. It was a lot. And, you know, when you're out there, I mean, there's literally nobody else. And you have to learn something special about sharing intimacy. You know, there's nothing else. It's just each other. And in a lot of ways, the book is as much about what, you know, friendship is, and knowing how necessary it is to close ranks. And
gather from what you just said that you yourself personally did not have family support.
Well, my mom was a writer and a great inspiration, but like me, she's damaged goods, and it was hard. She didn't have the tools. Best way I can really put it.
Oh, sure, and that's understandable.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author and musician Bill C. As you've heard so far, Bill has given us some insights into the life of a 22-year-old. Expectations and constraints set aside, we all can learn from Bill's experience. Please stay tuned because there is so much more. And by the way, Bill's website address is 33daysthebook.com. You had mentioned you had alcoholism in the family, but also, you know, when you're out on your own and like this, I mean, you're just, the alcohol is abundant because obviously you were many times playing where there's a lot of alcohol floating around. And I'm wondering how that played in the, you know, in your lives because of, you know, everybody sat around and you drink and.
Well, that's out there. You know, it's part and parcel of, you know, you check into a club, you know, you arrive midday or whatever it is, and, you know, they sit a pitcher of beer down, and there's a lot of waiting around and,
yeah,
and whatnot. I mean, listen, we weren't saints or anything out there, but, you know, in the same sense, you know, people often ask me, you know, is the sex, drugs, and rock and roll saying a myth or mm-hmm. you know, or was it reality? And, you know, I have to put it in context to the time. Like I said, this is not a tour, you know, by Learjet. I mean, we're in a little van, and, you know, we're basically just following the breadcrumbs on the highway left by, you know, these indie rock pioneers like Black Flag and Minutemen and Husker Du. And so we were just trying to learn these lessons of survival out there, passed along. I mean, it's not like today where you can Google how to tour in a van and there's 95,000 tips. I mean, you know, it was like almost like a secret society out there, and, you know, and but I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, we were on a mission, and there was a certain righteousness about it, and I felt that the eyes of the bands that taught us how to do it were on us, and we didn't want to let them down, and you know, we were completely dependent on the kindness of strangers for a place to stay or a free meal when we really had nothing, and a lot of times it was girls, you know, who helped us out, and I don't know, I just, it didn't feel right to scam them, you know, if, you know, because we knew we'd be coming back through these towns again and again, and every friend we made was like gold, so there was a certain amount of honor attached to it, so, you know, we couldn't just, you know, be all, you know, messed up and you know, drunk and you know, stumbling over people who are giving us their floor to sleep on and maybe making us breakfast.
So what were some of the aha moments for you during this 33 days?
Meaning?
Yeah, it's like, did you can reflect back and it's like, oh, yeah, uh-huh, yeah. And just sort of,
oh, looking back.
Looking back, yes, yes.
I guess the thing that comes to mind the most, because like I said, I didn't intend to write a book when I was journaling at the time. I found these journals, you know, years later, and what was really striking when I found them, it was about 10 years ago, was just the voice of the 22-year-old. Mm. It was, and I'm not trying to build myself up, but I mean, it was like reading a another person. It was so authentic to the time. You know, that only a 22-year-old can sound. I mean, like, I really worked very hard not to add, you know, the wisdom of hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
I really tried to keep it in the time, and I absolutely did not try and make myself come off as a hero. I mean, I just basically, as a narrator, you know, I tried not to get in the way of not only the story, but the, you know, the other characters, I mean, if I could call them, they're real, but they are like characters. And it's kind of interesting because, you know, you'd call this a memoir, I guess, But, you know, I wrote it like a novel, you know, and I was employing the same sort of techniques used in fiction, like narrative arc and character development and scene setting and dialogue and interior monologue. And, you know, like a straightforward band memoir, laying out the facts of the tour, you know, wouldn't have given the life of the characters and our struggles in the way that literary nonfiction does, which is, I guess, it's funny because, like, when I was writing the book, I knew I wanted to write it that way, but it wasn't until after it was published that I even found out that's what it's called. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I get it now. It's like the blend of the eye of a journalist with the moral vision of the novelist, and that's what I tried to do. I don't know if I was successful, but I mean, that was my intention.
What happened to Divine Weeks?
Well, you know, we put out one record to tour on that record. You know, it was 1987, so we had that one record out, which we worked, and then we got signed to a bigger label in 1990 and put out another record and toured on that, and then, you know, we came to an end in late 92. And people have asked me, why did you break up? And, you know, to be honest, the answer is because we wanted to stay friends.
And are you still friends?
Yeah, we are.
Do you ever get together and play, the four of you?
We got together one more time after that because our bass player, George, was moving back east. He's now a real rock star of the classroom. He's a medieval literature professor at Dartmouth. And so before he left, we got together for one show, and it went really well here in Los Angeles.
Great.
But we're still in touch, yeah.
Oh, that's great. So what happened to you when you came back and the band, you know, was no longer the band and you sort of all went your separate ways? What did you do?
Well, I've put out 5 solo records, so I've continued making music. As I said, my daughter, I still show her, you know, I'm still alive and well and still making music, and whether it ends up on the radio or in a little shoebox at the back of my closet, you know, I'm going to be making music until my last breath.
Is your daughter musically inclined too?
She loves music. She's actually a bigger fan of, you know, like Broadway and stuff.
Wow.
So she sings and dances, yeah. But, I mean, it's like a lot of my, you know, sort of, you know, music friends are like, oh, you have to make her like this, this, and that. And I say, I'm just grateful she loves music, you know.
Exactly.
Whatever, you know, follow the muse. Follow the muse.
I just want to reflect back a little bit on something you said. And so there again, you know, I'm kind of thinking of this 22-year-old guy having a journal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, you were off on your own, because I just don't imagine 22-year-olds having journals.
Gosh, I guess I just never thought about it. I mean, it's just something that was passed down from my mom. I mean, it's probably the most inspiring thing I got from my mom is, you know, I'd see her write on the fly all the time. You know, I mean, she had these stacks of, you know, backs of envelopes and, you know, crumpled up napkins and business cards, and she was always writing, always, always, always. You know, it's just like, it was just exploding. And, you know, it's like anything, you see, you know, somebody like your mom or your dad or whatever, you know, they do something, they're so passionate about it, you can't help but be drawn to it. And, you know, that was just something that was just such a fabric of my upbringing. And it just, it was just something I picked up and really didn't ever stop.
So, what did your future look like?
Well, I hope this book does well.
Okay.
And what I'd really love is for it to be made into a movie, you know, and it's funny, like I said, being from L.A., you know, there's a lot of people writing scripts and whatever, and, you know, for me, it's like, you know, they always say, like, and I'm going to be really tough, and I'm going to make sure they keep it exactly the way I want. And I go, well, good luck with that, you know, but
yeah.
That's why I wrote my book. You know, I'm completely at peace because I made the book that I wanted to make. And if they want to change it, you know, to, you know, whatever, turn the whole story inside out, as long as their check clears the bank, I'm fine with it. You know?
No kidding.
So.
Well, gosh, this has been really interesting, Bill, and I know that the listeners, too, have just sort of, you know, I'm sure it spikes their interest so that they can actually check you out and check out this book. It's called 33 Days, Touring in a Van, Sleeping on Floors, and Chasing a Dream. And it's an inspirational, like you say, it's coming of age. And I'm sure many of us that grew up as teens and or had teens in that generation will sort of, you know, be able to understand and really be able to reflect on their own lives and while reading yours. So it's
well, that's my hope.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's my hope. You know, like this will sound incredibly big-headed, but you know what I really wanted was I wanted to write a book that you go searching for after finishing Kerouac's On the Road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you wanted more journeys that go off the map. And I'm not comparing myself to as great a novel as that. But, I mean, I wanted a book that would make you sit up in the middle of your life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and look back at that moment, you know, as I said, that when you stood at your crossroads and had to decide whether to fire your shot or fold up your tent and head back home. I mean, I kind of look at it like, you know, it's for anyone who's, like, you're maybe mm-hmm. just finishing college and you're trying
right.
to decide whether to accept your buddy's offer to go backpacking in Europe or take that crappy job at your uncle's insurance company.
Right.
You know? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So I hope it is, to some extent, you know, an inspiration. And you don't have to know about indie rock, or, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to know all the bands or the circumstance in the story. I think it's really about, you know, firing your shot.
Yeah, well said. And, you know, that's what life is really about, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is. So, gosh, thanks again, Bill, and I really do appreciate you having spent this time with us and just kind of giving a little peek into your own life and what it was like back in 1987 to 1994, and you know, it's been interesting. Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it very much. Thanks so much.
And this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.